The Mitochondria in Long COVID, Part 1. Are Core Problems Being Uncovered? By Court Johnson, October 24th, 2024. Health Rising recently reported on studies suggesting that a hypermetabolic state that damages the mitochondria results in a hypometabolic state in chronic fatigue syndrome, ME/CFS, long COVID, and fibromyalgia, or FM. We also reported on studies suggesting that something in the blood, serum, or plasma is damaging the mitochondria. We are not done with the mitochondria yet, though. Far from it. Now we turn to a recent spate of mitochondrial studies in long COVID, ME/CFS, and fibromyalgia. First, long COVID. While there's always been some interest in the mitochondria in long COVID, it's picked up dramatically in the past year or so, and it seems like we're seeing movement in this issue. Whacked skeletal muscles, oh my. The first study examined 120 long COVID patients who had ended up in the ICU, not our typical group. A follow-up indicated that almost all of them suffered from post-viral fatigue and did poorly on a 6-minute walk test at 45% of normal. Muscle biopsies done almost a year later found a higher abundance of M2-like macrophages, which are involved in tissue repair, and satellite cells, and lower activity of the second and fourth mitochondrial complexes. The authors concluded that aberrant repair and altered mitochondrial activity in skeletal muscles associates with long-term impairments in patients surviving an ICU admission for COVID-19. I was unable to get this study, but the obvious questions here are, how does a respiratory infection like COVID-19 end up damaging the skeletal muscles? And why are immune factors involved in tissue repair still apparently trying to repair the muscle fibers almost a year after the infection? Putting the pieces together, a recent U.S. study, Respiratory SARS-CoV-2 Infection Causes Skeletal Muscle Atrophy and Long-Lasting Energy Metabolism Suppression, had an answer for this. This study used a hamster model to suss out what was happening in the skeletal muscles after a coronavirus infection. The fact that the virus did not invade the muscles, but still produced atrophy of the muscle fibers, brings up the question of how it managed to do this. It appears that the virus initiated two processes that allowed it to do this. For one, it suppressed the genes associated with the muscle fibers, the ribosomes, which produce proteins, with mitochondrial metabolism, energy production, as well as genes involved in fatty acid B oxidation, a key source of energy for the mitochondria. The TCA, or citric acid or Krebs cycle, and all five of the complexes found in the electron transport chain. The gist is the virus turned off genes involved in energy production. Note that there are two parts to aerobic energy production. First, the TCA, or Krebs cycle, produces electron carriers, NADH and FADH, and then provides them to the OXPHOS complex, electron transport chain. OXPHOS, or OXPHOS, then produces the end result, ATP, or adenosine triphosphate. Somehow, the virus downregulated genes associated with both of these complexes. As it was doing that, it unleashed a barrage of inflammatory factors, IFNA, IFNY, and TNFA, which triggered a shift from relying mostly on aerobic energy production to anaerobic energy production, or glycolysis. Since it also downregulated genes associated with muscle fibers, it's no wonder the hamster's muscles were in such poor shape. The authors concluded, in what looks like the beginning of a nice treatment regimen, that targeting TNFA during acute SARS-CoV-2 infection to tone down the inflammation that triggers the energy shift, and then using drugs that can boost mitochondrial functions, enhance protein synthesis, and inhibit protein degradation, may be useful for treating the muscle fatigued, associated with long COVID. Looking forward to the Open Medicine Foundation's deep dive into the muscles, David Systrom's examination of the muscle biopsies used in his mitochondrial treatment study, and Paul Huang's work on WASF3. Dig deeper. Check out WASF3. NIH researchers find new mitochondrial abnormality in ME/CFS. And you can see the link for that in the text version of the article. The Muscles, Part 2. A muscle study called Maximal Oxidative Capacity During Exercise is Associated with Muscle Power Output in Patients with Long Coronavirus Disease 2019, COVID-19 Syndrome. A moderation analysis assessed maximal fatty acid oxidation, MFO, i.e., energy produced by the breakdown of fats during exercise. In fatty acid oxidation, fatty acids are transported into the mitochondria via carnitine, where they are broken up and then enter both the TCA cycle, where the electron carriers are created, and the electron transport chain, where ATP is finally produced. I.e., fats play key roles in both parts of the mitochondrial energy production process. Fat breakdown is an important aspect of energy production during exercise, because during moderate exercise, 45 to 65% of VO2 max, the body mostly uses fats as its primary fuel source. This study found significantly reduced levels of fatty acid oxidation in the long COVID patients and a premature shift from relying on fats to carbohydrates to power our cells. This wasn't so surprising. Problems with carnitine, which transports fatty acids into the mitochondria, have popped up in both long COVID and ME/CFS, suggesting that the fatty acids that power the mitochondria during exercise may not be getting into them. Rob Wust, in fact, recently found that muscle atrophy was associated with reduced fatty acid oxidation, energy production, in long COVID. Importantly, the authors noted that in cases like this, dysfunctional mitochondria consume excess oxygen but produce less ATP energy, resulting in an increased production of the same reactive oxygen species, ROS, or free radicals, featured in the studies above. Looking forward to Maureen Hansen's work on metabolomics and hers and Rob Wust's continuing work on lipid and carnitine dysregulation. A core breakdown identified? Meanwhile, in the study called SARS-CoV-2 Mitochondrial Metabolic and Epigenomic Reprogramming in COVID-19, the Center for Mitochondrial and Epigenomic Medicine reported that an exhaustive search revealed that the coronavirus not only, quote, strongly inhibits mitochondrial oxidative phosphorylation, or OXPHOS, aerobic energy production, but also increases mitochondrial reactive oxygen species, MROS, i.e. free radical production. This paper, like the review below, proposed that mitochondrial breakdown does more than impact energy production. It also radically alters immune system functioning. Note that authors believed that increased free radical production, reactive oxygen species, or ROS, pushes the cell into anaerobic energy production. A similar idea was proposed by Stanford researcher Vishnu Shankar, whose ME/CFS T-cell study found that higher ROS levels resulted in increased T-cell proliferation. Not necessarily a good thing. Shankar believes that all that T-cell proliferation puts a greater strain on ME/CFS patients, probably already damaged mitochondria, resulting in the production of even more reactive oxygen species, or ROS, and more damage to the mitochondria. The immune shift engineered by viruses through the production of DAMPS is an intentional one to distract the immune system and get cells to provide the substrates the viruses need to grow. High levels of reactive oxygen species, ROS, or free radicals, levels, release mitochondrial DNA, mtDNA, which then triggers the activation of the innate or early immune side of the immune system. That's not a good thing, as the innate immune system is responsible for much of the inflammation produced by the immune system, but is not designed to combat pathogens. The part of the immune system that is, the adaptive immune side, is sidelined, resulting in impaired pathogen defenses and increased inflammation. Several researchers, including Avindra Nath, believe that the immune system tries to compensate for the impaired adaptive immune defense by ramping up the innate immune response. Nath believes this impaired adaptive immune response is the key driver in ME/CFS. The authors believe this process triggers epigenetic alterations that suppress aerobic energy production long after the virus has been vanquished. They noted that all the common symptoms of long COVID, and thus of ME/CFS as well, post-exertional malaise, fatigue, brain fog, dizziness, gastrointestinal symptoms, heart palpitations, hormonal alterations, thirst, blood sugar alterations, chronic cough, inflammation, chest pain, and abnormal movements, cerebellar effects, have been found in mitochondrial diseases. Given that, they propose that the most effective therapies will include treatments to boost mitochondrial functioning and reduce the production of mitochondrial reactive oxygen species, ROS, or free radicals. Shankar found antioxidant treatments like NAC, metformin, and liprostatin 1 reduced the problematic T-cell proliferation he found in culture. Looking forward to Shankar's paper on oxidative stress, continuing work on energy production in the B-cells from the UK, and a blog on mitochondrial repair. The Core Breakdown, Take 2. Three other review papers over the past year have explicated how a coronavirus infection may be impacting energy metabolism and the mitochondria in long COVID. One asserted that the predominant view of the mitochondria as the main energy producers of the cell is misguided and incomplete, harkening back to Navio's characterization of the mitochondria as the primary threat-sensing part of the cell. The authors think of the mitochondria as central cellular processors that integrate signals from inside and outside the cell and then send out signals that regulate physiological processes at the level of the cell, organ, and organism. In their conception, the leaky electron transport chains in the mitochondria of long COVID patients even have something to do with their leaky guts, i.e., the mitochondrial problems affect much more than the low energy levels and fatigue. Looking forward to more comprehensive reviews of the potential impact of mitochondrial breakdown in these diseases. Conclusion. Poorly functioning mitochondria may be doing a lot more than simply impacting energy levels. They could be causing an immune shift that impairs our ability to fight off pathogens and pushes our immune systems more toward allergic or mast cell responses. Plus, as Navio pointed out some time ago, they may have a broad impact on physiological processes across the body. Indeed, Dr. Martin Lerner was fond of saying that increased energy levels took care of virtually all his ME/CFS patients' symptoms. We may also be getting closer to understanding why the mitochondria have gone wrong. Problems with fatty acid oxidation, for instance, may be preventing fatty acids from getting to the mitochondria. Infections may be shifting the mitochondria into a hypermetabolic state which exhausts them. Why that would happen in ME/CFS and long COVID, we don't know, but the production of increased reactive oxygen species, free radicals, could be pushing our cells to rely on anaerobic energy production. Whether that is a secondary phenomenon caused by mitochondrial breakdown, or whether a breakdown in our antioxidant defenses is to blame, or both, is unclear. Red light, infrared therapy, is an intriguing possibility, since it could boost both mitochondrial and antioxidant production. While no one expects it to be a fix for these diseases, it could help. A blog is coming up on that. Please support Health Rising and keep the information flowing. You can give a one-time donation at the link in the text version of the article.